just get my mic. Sorry for my tardiness. Shove some cereal in my mouth real quick.
No, the conversation does need energy. It is mindfulness.
Exactly. Preparing.
I don't have hunger distractions.
The preparation.
Get ready.
Get ready. I feel like every time we get into the studio, Carol, it's like, where in the world are we? More so lately, it's you, where in the world are you? Because you've had an exciting moving to the UK journey that you've been on. And last time we met at the beginning of the year, you had been relocated. But now I can see by your summery attire that you are not in the United Kingdom.
No, I'm not, Jeff. Lovely to be the podcast with you once again. South Africa's in Cape Town at the moment. I am going through a no sunscreen phase. And I know that's possibly diabolical saying that, but let me just put it. The UK has been cold. I have not seen or felt the sun on my skin in a while. So I was like, you know what? I'm outside. I'm feeling the warmth. I'm really soaking in the rays of the sun. So very happy to be recording from Cape Town this time around and super excited to do this.
And if listeners timestamp this episode, they will say, actually, in March, Carol, we had some sunny weather. As a former resident of many decades in the United Kingdom, I can tell you this is part of British lore and that you will get this pushback around how much sun you do get in the UK. Just know that these are urban myths and that the sun will come, but the sun will go. So I applaud your soaking in of the vitamin D while you're in one of life's most beautiful cities and getting the joy. But you and I have been working together on quite a few projects lately where we've noticed a bit of a pattern coming up. We've been summoned to the studio by producer Emily to talk about this because I think we've been catching on to some key learnings. And just to give a little bit of context for the listeners joining in, there's definitely something in the waters right now around business performance and how do we get teams to deliver. And you and I have been noticing there's a couple of blockers to performance that aren't in the typical realm of competencies and delivering on OKRs. There's something else in the waters. I wanted to have this conversation with you because as we've been working through this journey together, I've noticed some Carol wisdom coming into the client work. And I'm hoping our listeners today will resonate with some of the things that we want to say. So Carol, you and I have been working on some projects lately where we've noticed a trend and a theme coming up. And we discussed that with Emily, our podcast producer. We thought we should get into the studio right away to capture some of your wisdom around things we've been noticing here. And particularly, we've been working with clients all around how to get teams to perform at their best and reach the somewhat stretch goals that are in business today. And that the things that we've been noticing that have been blocking performance right now are not necessarily clarity around things like OKRs or KPIs, but more in the quality of presence that people are bringing into their work. Let's set the scene a little bit about that. What have we been noticing when we've been in businesses right now, noticing the sort of quality of presence that people have been bringing?
So what we have been noticing is quite a lot of distraction. And sometimes people don't really grasp the element of the distraction, but gadgets are distracting people in meetings. And there's an assumption that you always need to be on during meetings, be accessible, make sure that you respond to the Slack, respond and respond and respond. And I know generally in the world, there's an assumption that children must be the ones that must have their gadgets taken away, you know, or are the ones that are really struggling with the distractions. But it's also filtering its way, if anything, into the adult space, into the boardrooms, meetings, stand-up meetings, and it's having a really significant impact on the quality of thinking. And I guess maybe there's a conversation with what has quality of thinking got to do with cell phones?
Yeah, it's interesting if everybody could just anchor for a second around that notion of the distraction. I mean, personally, I find it very hard to watch anything on TV right now without checking my phone. I also do this thing where I need to research whatever I'm watching and like find the backstory of something. So rather than just watching the show and enjoying the show, I've got one eye and half my brain on it whilst I'm running another script of some research or I'm texting someone. I've noticed people walking down the street. They're not actually walking down the street. They're on their phones, and they're not on their phones using a map. They are on their phones texting someone or, I don't know, researching, whatever, but they're not really present and in the moment. And I think all of us can have that experience. Carol, you are no stranger to this. Are you totally namaste ability to stay focused at all times on your Korean dramas?
Jeff, I am guilty as charged. Like, I'm really standing up and I'm like, you know what, guilty as charged. My thing is really just watching TV and TikToking at the same time and thinking I can do both things. And what I've realized is I've missed an essential part of this whole conversation. I've missed something on the TikTok as well that I was supposed to be watching at that time. In some ways, I tend to feel like I didn't get the satisfaction or the joy of the particular thing that I was watching fully or fully experience it, because I'm neither here nor there and I'm nowhere. It leaves me feeling like a need was not met. Yeah.
And I think if we take that into the work environment, there's this sort of myth of multitasking, isn't it? That I can be in a meeting and doing something else, or I could be having a conversation with you whilst I'm sending that email. There's been plenty of research out there that shows that multitasking is a myth thing, two things at once really well. But I think where we've always talked about that at Within is the ability for folks to be mindfully present. We're going to unpack that a little bit in what we talk about today, because I know for some people, mindful could be a little bit woke DEI, depending what part of the country you come from. But I think if we got to the real essence of it, it just means exactly what you said. You're neither here nor there. Do the thing that you mean to do. Do it well and feel the joy of it. And I think for me, it's really the power of being in the zone. When I am doing one thing, I am cooking, I am watching TV, I am writing, I am making music, I'm not doing my emails and trying to text my friends while I'm doing that. I am in the zone doing the one thing. And that has such a benefit, not only to my output of what I'm doing, but also to the joy that I feel in life. I remember when I was recording music, I would lose hours, if not days, of just being in the joy of the creation. I would come out of the sort of like fog of it at about 7 p.m. and realize I had not eaten all day because I was so in the joy of the creation. And I think that is joy. Like, it's amazing, isn't it? Do you have experiences like that as well? The sort of flow state or getting in the zone?
I think what's coming up for me as you speak, Jeff, is I'm actually questioning whether I've really fully experienced some of the things that I've done. Like, how much have I really lost out in some of the things that I claim to have enjoyed because a part of my mind was not there? What would have happened if I was in the zone, if I was present with myself, with the client, with the music that I was listening to? What effect or impact would that have had on me? So as we come into spaces, especially workspaces, how much of ourselves are we really leaving behind? And how much is the business really losing out on from the capacity that we can offer and possibly the gift of what we're bringing into that workspace?
I think you're right. Like, if I'm a leader and I'm working with someone, I want to know they're in the game or in the show, right? If I go and watch a band play, I don't want the guitarist to be texting in the middle of the show. I want them to give me the show. If I'm going to watch football, I do not need the striker to stop and like check TikTok, because I need them to finish the job. And I think this is where the discipline of getting into the moment is every one of our responsibilities. But as a leader, I think I have a job not only to live up to that and walk the talk, but also ask my team to be present and in the moment. Because if I want the team to perform, they have to be fully in it. And I think the benefit for them as an individual is they're going to get more out of the experience of work.
They get more, they make better decisions. And I feel like we owe the people we work with as well, our counterparts, we owe them quality thinking, we owe them quality presence, because there are some people who really take this seriously and show up fully. So to stop others from fading from conversations or fading in the workplace, we really owe others our whole selves in that moment. And that's not to say don't forget about the dog that's not feeling so well, or don't forget about the flower, but we are saying in that moment, we would really love it if all of you was in the room.
And not only that, there has been several pieces of research that have come out, I think all the way back to 2016, 2017, where the smartphone frenzy was really coming in, that shows that the quality of our strategic thinking drops off the more we are devoted to our devices. The research has shown that when the phone is on the table and all your notifications are on, you aren't really using the critical thinking part of your brain that's going to give you the best outcomes for anything that involves that level of cognitive processing. The research then says that if the phone has notifications silenced or maybe and the phone is turned over, you get a little bit better, but you're still so addicted to noticing the notifications that you've got half your brain on it. So let's just say we're at 25% capacity of critical thinking. When it's in our pocket or when it's in a bag, then we get better. So it allows for more critical thinking capacity. And it really is sort of the capacity of your brain. So think about like, I can't give myself fully to thinking critically. It's better, but because it's still in our proximity, we can feel it. We get itchy for it. We want it. We want to check it. I know it's there, especially if it's in my pocket. I can tell it's like a heavy weight, right? When we take it and we put it outside of our persons in another room, it's nowhere near us. The ability for us to think critically and make better decisions exponentially increases. So the science is there. Why aren't people doing this? What's stopping us from insisting that the phone is nowhere near us when we're working?
Jeff, that's a tough one, because I'll tell you what. Is I think an assumption sometimes in business that we need to be available, we need to be accessible, even though we are in a meeting. We have stopped creating zones of concentration, zones of let me say that again. They've stopped creating zones that have no access, zones that are really sacred to the process of thinking. We believe that if you're not accessible, something's going to burn. And half of the things that we actually are distracted by are things that we can manage. Or it's just the excitement, I think, because as you were speaking, I thought of the time, you know, when you were a child and they said you're going to the park tomorrow. It's like everything in between that day and the park doesn't matter because you're in this feeling of I have to access the park. And that's the same with our notifications. We are constantly expecting something, and being in a state of expectation constantly, I think, is exhausting on the nervous system to a point. If we stop expecting and think to ourselves, what will be, whatever I'll need to deal with, I'll deal with after this meeting. Let me just be here, offer myself, and hear what other people are thinking and see what that will produce.
I think you're right. There's that almost addiction, or if not overt addiction, to the dopamine hits that we get from the phone. But there's the excitement too. Like, you want people to connect with you. You want to be wanted and needed. And so there's something about like, ooh, I can't be present in this 45-minute meeting right now because someone's going to need me to do something else. Or, you know, we work a lot in hospitality. Operationally, someone might have to call me and get a hold of me.
I agree with you. The sense of importance. I am so important that they need me and I cannot be taken away from them. And if I'm not there, and sometimes maybe it does also speak to how we've structured our teams, because there are people who cannot for the life of them be in a meeting or leading a team because they're worried about that team not having someone to lead them. What are we really saying about the systems that we've created? Can our people operate without us? Can they do without us for 45 minutes? I think for most people, it's actually yes, but we've set up systems that require has to be on, in and out of a room.
One thing that happens when you work with within people and we're in the middle of a creative process with you is we have a no phone and laptop policy. I mean, definitely no laptops. You don't need laptops to do the creative work when you're in a within session. So we always ask people to put their laptops away. It's just not needed for the work we're going to do today. But the phones, we've been a little bit liberal with sometimes. But Carol, we did an experiment lately where we asked a senior team to put their phones away on day one and just put it in their bag or in their pocket to notice the difference of their quality of attention. And then on day two, we got a little bit braver with them and we asked them to put it in a drawer at the back of the room. I was thinking there may be a small mutiny with this request, but how did it go? I made the request, so it was really good to get your feedback on how it was going. We talked about it before as a bit of a strategy to help the group kind of get into better connection with each other. But what was your observation of the experiment?
This year, I thought, oh my God, are we really going to do this? Because we are really expecting a revolution. The team, in credit to them, they were really good about it. They made an effort, but you could see the itches. I call them the itches. Like, they're just itching to get their hands on that phone. They're itching to flip it over. They're itching to just check for 5 minutes. So the first day was really tough. And when you asked the team, they were like, it was hard because there's the constant sense that I'm missing out on something. By the time I'm done here, the house could have burned down or whatever else is burning in their minds. And it was lovely to see them step into the discomfort. I think what really worked was the ability of a team to step into discomfort and to try something. And when we did it the second day and we asked them to put it in the drawers, it was like, okay, let's see where this will take us. What would happen? And when they got the breaks, like tea break, and then they would also get a phone break, you could see like it was the Serengeti, them rushing to go get their phones. And you're like, oh my God, we're having the migration, right? And then they pick up their phones and it's like, let me check what's happening. Let me make the calls. Those that did their emails, and on time as well, they put them back. And what they said was, it was a gift. We gave them a gift, and we gave them the gift of presence. We gave them the gift of time. We gave them the opportunity to hear somebody fully without wondering what could be happening to the people that were not with us. So I think it went well, but it requires bravery. It also requires vulnerability on the team's part and accepting that there is something beyond the phones and the messages that are coming through.
I think that it was a really great experiment. I want to do more of that. Well done to that team for stepping into it and agreeing to carry on with it. But it feels like we're taking the phones away and that's going to revolutionize the experience of work. I think it's a small step towards something that is quite a big shift that I would love to encourage leaders in the workplace to do, which is like, you do want your teams to be high performing right now. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. We need critical thinking. We need creativity right now to solve not only the problems of the day, but to kind of build the resilience that's going to deal with a lot of the uncertainty that's out there. So if you want a high performing team, you got to get them back in the conditions of being the best team they can be. And I think in the example of that client, we put that wrapper around it. Like, you guys want to do your best work today. You want to work as a high performing, world-class executive team. You're going to have to change the way you're approaching the work today, because that's going to get you to a better outcome. I feel like that's the imperative, rather than, hey, your phone's bugging me, get your phone out of the room. It is a little bit more of like, why are we doing this? What is this for? Okay, so we've come up with 4 top tips on how we think leaders can be thinking a little bit more about the connection between performance and presence. As we were drafting these, I was thinking, like, this is what boardrooms need. This is what we need to see executives around the table, never mind just great creative minds around a table. Like, how do we get the best thinking out of people who are supposed to be running the show? As we were coming up with these tips, I was challenging us to think, would a board do this? And I think they should. So the first tip we've called get ready. Get ready to get into presence. What does this mean?
Well, Jeff, honestly speaking, it's derived from the whole concept of preparing yourself for something like a date, for example, or going out to meet someone. Most of the time, we take time to prepare ourselves. We will brush our hair. We will make sure that our foundation is on fleek. We will make sure we're all shaved, whatever else we need to do. But there's an element of intention around your preparation for the self. In the same way, when you're getting into your meetings, the process of removing your phone is also one of those things that are essential to the get ready process. Sitting quietly with your thoughts. And we're not saying sit still like kids in high school or in primary school, but really just take time to land into the room. Find some form of stillness within yourself, being here now in the moment and preparing to meet others in that moment is so useful, because when we step into rooms, we have a different energy, and getting the room to align on an energy is work in itself before we start talking about the things that are essential in that meeting. So there's also the need to consider our impact on others as well in the room. So it's so important to ground yourself. It's so important to find stillness, because it's not just about you. It's about you and the bigger good.
I think that's right. We're going to collaborate. We're going to make some big decisions. We're a board. We're a senior team. Quite often, we've got a meeting right up to the point where we're joining another meeting or another call, and it's very difficult for us to clear down what we've just done and step into something new. And I feel like that's the key. Like, are you ready to collaborate today? Are you ready to do your best thinking? How do you get in that sort of preparation for yourself? Everybody must have their own practice for that. But I think even something as simple as, can we stop booking meetings back to back to back to back with each other? Can we have the space that creates the pause before we go into that? Okay, top tip number two. We've called this one being intentional about removing the distractions. We've just been talking about removing the phone. And I think that's one physical thing, like get all the other things that might distract you out of the way. But I've also got some other distractions possibly going on in my head. Am I in the moment right now? Am I thinking about my last meeting or what I'm having for dinner tonight or the problems of the world around me? So Carol, I've often said it would be really great if senior executives would meditate before they start a meeting. I think that if that's a bit much for a lot of people, I think a lot of people don't find meditation as something that's accessible to them. But is that what we're saying here? Like, should we see boardrooms meditating?
The truth, Jeff, is if we said something like that, I don't think we'd have a lot of clients coming our way because you need to be in relationship with the sounds of the waterfall and the gong and all those things. And I don't think we're quite there yet. For some boardrooms, that can work. But for the majority, what we're really speaking to here is a clearing of the mind. And when we talk about the clearing, we do appreciate and accept that we have people that are in hospital. We have kids that are dealing with hard stuff. We have depression. We have all those real life hard things that we're working with. But how do we hold space and notice what we are feeling and still be present? And I think there's something about asking ourselves as we get into these boardrooms, what is it that I'm holding that I cannot let go of that would possibly distract me? And naming that and saying, okay, I have the cat. I have the child at school. All right, is there anything that I can do in the next 45 minutes that would need me to step up in any way and help or alleviate the situation? If your answer is no, then whatever is happening now can wait for the next 45 minutes and I will deal with it afterwards. That process is like a storm. It clears the path for us. It doesn't stop the distraction that has happened around us or whatever challenges, but we are aware of what is in our field of play and the things that might distract us. And when you notice that happening, just holding that into awareness is important.
I think a really practical practice for that is just a check-in at the beginning of a session. I know that boards and executives want to get down to business, but a simple ritual of that clearing down. So we'll often use things, what are you bringing today? What are you leaving behind? Or like, what's your weather? How is everyone doing right now? Brings that into awareness in the room and helps to calibrate everyone into a greater sense of presence. And that can take 2 minutes. It does not need to take that long. You want to get down to business, but get into business in the right way. Okay, top tip number three. Obviously, you're in the middle of collaboration, critical thinking, decision making while you're around the table. Our thoughts begin to wander. I start to itch for the distraction. I start to think about something else. I'm worried about what my team is doing whilst I've taken this 45-minute moment to be in a meeting with someone else. What do we do to bring us back into the room, Carol, when inevitably our distracted mind will become out of focus of being in the moment with my colleague?
The biggest thing you can do is actually appreciate and accept that your mind has begun to wander. And once you notice yourself thinking about the cheeseburger at home or the movie, the next scene, whatever the case may be, accepting that my mind has wandered and not holding myself in contempt or guilt is the first step. And just like getting lost in real life practically, if you were getting lost, you wouldn't keep walking aimlessly. You'd pause and trace your steps back. And it's the same thing from a mental place as well. When you notice yourself wandering, when you notice yourself thinking about things that you shouldn't be thinking about in a meeting, it is for you to then walk back to the room in a mental headspace. And when you find yourself distracted and you feel like I have to grab my phone, walk back into the room mentally and do that without any judgment around, I got lost in my train of thought or I got distracted. We're human. It happens to us. What's important is coming back into the room. Don't keep walking.
I think this, again, is a real practice, isn't it? In coaching skills, we learn active listening and how important it is to be fully present for your client and to be able to connect to them. And so we learn how to notice the distractions and to sort of recalibrate it. And you sort of get into that flow state of even just listening. I don't think this is something people really learn a skill around. To notice how you're distracted and bring yourself back is a real habit former. So I like what you said there, like, don't feel bad when you get distracted because it's going to happen, but cultivate a sense of self-awareness to continue to bring yourself back into the room. Okay, tip number four, committing to a practice in the group. So what we did in the story with the group that put their phones in the drawer, we had to get their commitment and buy-in to collaborate a little bit differently, didn't we? I think the way that executives meet or creative teams meet or boards meet, there's a commitment to that ritual and a way to doing that in a way that gets us to the best outcomes. I'm not sure everybody makes those kind of commitments when they set up a way of collaborating. When we work with clients, we establish that commitment and that ritual. But why do we need the commitment to collaborate differently, Carol? And how do we sort of work with that commitment over time? I imagine we could set up a commitment in one meeting. We're going to collaborate together this way, and we'll just forget about that the next time.
If you're quite right, there is something about the commitment. But I think more than anything else, one of the biggest things that we did with the previous group was we helped them understand why it was important to, for example, not use phones in the session. And when people understand the why, it doesn't have the parent-child dynamic where, like, I'm taking your phones away from you. But this is what happens when you have your phone next to you. This is the kind of thinking that you have in the room. This is the joy that you would get. And this is how well you'd contribute. And when people understand why, it's easier for them to put their commitments on something they understand. And once you can get your team committed to the fact that the quality of thinking in this room will be so high, we will use half the meeting time because everyone is present. We will get better outcomes and we'll actually have our best thinking yet. That is so important in bringing your team and creating buy-in and also normalizing the fact that this is something we do here in our organization. These are the benefits, and normalizing that sometimes we might get distracted and that creates safety. So creating environments where people understand why they're doing things, the impact of the things that they're doing, and what they will get out of it is so important.
I think what's coming up for me when you say that is leaders really want a culture of performance, but I wonder if they established more of a culture of presence, worked with at source what leads to better performance rather than trying to just demand outcomes all the time. I wonder what would happen. I wonder what the business performance would look like. And I wonder what the quality of the employee experience would be like. Because if I'm more present in what I'm doing, I'm going to be more connected to the purpose and the impact of what I've been working towards. And that is going to give me a much better experience of work. And I think leaders have maybe gotten it wrong. They're demanding outcomes rather than I think leaders have got it wrong. I think they've been demanding outcomes instead of creating the conditions for people to be their best performer at work.
Totally, Jeff. Totally. And imagine stepping into a room knowing we haven't done our best thinking yet. Our best thinking is yet to come. I think that gives a group something to look forward to. You know, when we come together, great thoughts are thought in this room. Mighty men and women or whatever are gathered in this room. And the thoughts that are in this room are quality thoughts. That's what presence does. And when you walk away from that room, you know the decision that we have made was well thought out. Half of the time we have people in meetings saying, please say that again. I kind of missed that. And when someone says, I kind of missed that, you know that they were walking in their mind and they were walking off the grid. So to prevent that, you know, let's bring people in. Let's encourage them to really, really step into being here right now and unleashing their own potential, therefore performing to the best of their capabilities.
Carol, as always, the wisdom flows. Four tips that I hope leaders can take away from this. Thank you. Always a pleasure to get you into the studio and a very present 40-minute conversation with you.
Always a joy, Jeff. I look forward to our next one.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Tune in to our podcast every other week for more episodes on what's happening in the culture and leadership space, what's on the mind of the leaders committed to change in our community, and other future of work content that you crave. Reimagining Work from Within is available wherever you listen to podcasts.